Well, as we said yesterday, I'll read out from this volume 22, starting with the page 432, I think, 33, a series of letters on rebirth. I read out a few selected ones yesterday, but today I'll start reading from the beginning itself. But all these letters have the central truth that are really discussed in the Life Divine in the subsequent chapters. So you can see, if you remember, if you can remember, by the time we come to the third chapter of the series, lot of these truths are covered in that chapter also. But as they are in a simpler language here, we will try to understand them first here in these letters. The soul takes birth each time, and each time a mind, life and body are formed out of the materials of universal nature according to the soul's past evolution and its need for the future. When the body is dissolved, the vital goes into the vital plane and remains there for a time. But after a time, the vital sheath disappears. The last to dissolve is the mental sheath. Finally, the soul or psychic being retires into the psychic world to rest there till a new birth is closed. This is the general course for ordinarily developed human beings. There are variations according to the nature of the individual and his development. For example, if the mental is strongly developed, then the mental being can remain. So also can the vital, provided they are organized by and centered around the true psychic being. They share the immortality of the psychic. I think this we have said it often, how each layer or the sheath, the mental or the vital, can become immortal if they are centered around the true psychic being. That is, I suppose, the meaning of the transformation of the mind and the vital, that they are seeped by the psychic influence, the psychic light. So the closer our mind and the vital go towards the psychic, the greater are the chances of their remaining or becoming immortal. Otherwise, as you said in the first paragraph, they get dissolved on their respective levels. The soul gathers the essential elements of its experiences in life and makes that its basis of growth in the evolution. When it returns to birth, it takes up with its mental, vital, physical sheaths so much of its karma as is useful to it in the new life for further experience. So this is again something that, remember, we have Sri Aurobindo discussed at length in the third chapter of the series on rebirth. That is, when it comes back to earth for a rebirth, it does gather its subtle mind, subtle vital and the subtle physical, because it is in those layers that the karma of the previous life is stored. So what happens is that it does not carry its entire karma of its past births into each life. It is only so much of its karma as is useful to it in the new life. That means, say, by the word karma, do not think only of the bad effects. I mean, it's not the question of the retribution of the past acts, etc. Karma means all that it has developed in the past life. It selects only that much which is useful for the next life. So you see, there is as we have been commonly thinking, the whole of the previous life's karma comes to me, so I suffer my last births, ill deeds and good deeds and all that. So it's not necessary that, you know, whatever I have done in my past birth comes to me in this life. In fact, in another letter he will explain that, you see, sometimes it takes a completely different karma. I mean, say, in my last life if I was something, I could be the very opposite, because the soul says, I will develop, say, those characteristics of, say, an artist, if I were a painter last life. It's not necessary that I will become a greater painter this life. The entire karma means the experience of an artist, it leaves behind. He says, I'll take it up maybe in one of the subsequent lives. It's not necessary that I should come back as an artist and become a greater and a better painter. So you can see there is a choice of that action which is necessary for the present life. That much is taken up. So let's again remember that the entire past karma does not follow me in this life. Otherwise it would be too automatic, you know, what I do. Normally, why we are saying all this is because normally that's what we have been given to understand. What I have done in my past life, I have the reward this life. What I do in this life, I will have the reward next life. It's not that kind of an automatic past into the present and the present into the future. Otherwise it becomes too mechanical. But the soul and the jiva, Ashwamedha calls it Karana Purusha, is beyond these mechanical laws that the mind has given in the interpretation of rebirth. So this is important phrase where it says, only takes up so much of its karma as is useful to it in the new life for further experience. We'll come back to it in other letters. In the last paragraph of this letter, he brings about a new point. He says, it's really for the vital part of the being that Shraddha and rites are done, to help the being to get rid of the vital vibrations which still attach it to the earth or to the vital worlds, so that it may pass quickly to its rest in the psychic peace. Well, I think in India, every state has its own Shraddha ceremonies. And the basic idea being, it is to release the vital vibrations which still attach it to the earth or to the vital worlds. Well, each region again has, you know, the number of days, the third day or the 12th day or the 10th day, some day, doesn't matter which day. But there is a Shraddha ceremony and it has come to us from the ancient times, but you can see there is a truth in that. But we'll see the next letter what Sri Aurobindo thinks about it. He's just stating that this is the meaning of Shraddha. To cut off the vital vibrations which are really around the gross physical. Not the mental and the deep vital, we cannot do much. So that's why in Shraddha we have the food, at least in and around Hyderabad. What we do is, we prepare the food, because the food is the grossest thing. What Sri Aurobindo calls the vital vibration is still attached to the earth. So our preferences to certain foods are the grossest link to earth. So we in Hyderabad circle, what we do is normally prepare the favorite food or food dishes of the deceased and then give it to the birds, or sometimes it's thrown into the water so that the fish consume that food. So this has been, of course, what Sri Aurobindo writes, I knew it before because through the practices, that we have at Hyderabad, that is meant only to release the vital being. Well, you know, there are Brahmins are called and then Pindas are made and all kinds of things are done, but remember the basic idea is this. Now, Sri Aurobindo says, I only said what was originally meant by the ceremonies, the rites. I was not referring to the feeding of the caste or the Brahmins, which is not a rite or ceremony. You know, this is also done to feed the Brahmins or to feed the poor class. He said, that doesn't come into any of the ceremony. That is an additional thing, but that is not, feeding the Brahmin or the caste does not really help the disease to get rid of his vital vibrations. So whether Shraddha as performed is actually effective is another matter. For those who perform it have not either the knowledge or the occult power. So he has not really confirmed if it should be done or not. But I have a very vague memory of my father telling me once he had asked the mother about it, and the mother did approve, because this is the basic truth. But I show him the comments here, those who do, that means the pujaris, they have neither the knowledge nor the occult power. You see, when one does a puja, the Brahmin or the pujari must have that kind of a consciousness to effectuate the function. But as we know, our pujaris at present have hardly any knowledge of what they are doing. Maybe they have, as a parrot, memorized the mantras or the slokas or the verses, and their eye is fully on the money that you lend, give them. So Sri Aurobindo is telling us, I don't know how much of knowledge they have in order to help the vital being. So I think what we do here at Pondicherry in the ashram, that we don't have the Shraddha ceremony as such for feeding people or and all that. But yes, there is a quiet meditation and invoking the mother. So we ourselves are not pujaris capable of really releasing the departed soul. But yes, we invoke the mother and pray that she may help the person who has left the body to pass over this vital region. So that way the idea still persists, but it has taken a completely new form. The human pujaris and pandas and Brahmins are not involved. It's a direct relation with you and the mother and the family member who has left the body. Well, it will come back in another form, in another paragraph, Shravanda gives us further information on that. Now, this is his next letter. After leaving the body, the soul, after certain experiences in other worlds, throws off its mental and vital personalities and goes into rest to assimilate the essence of its past and prepare for a new life. It is this preparation that determines the circumstances of the new birth and guides it in its reconstitution of a new personality and the choice of its materials. The departed soul retains the memory of its past experiences only in their essence. The details are not there at all. Not in that form of detail. It is only if the soul brings back some past personality or personalities as part of its present manifestation that it is likely to remember the details of the past life. Otherwise, it is only by yoga drishti that the memory comes. So you see, this is again a further clarification. It is only if the soul brings back some past personality. I mean, say, 10 births before it had developed a personality. And in the present life it wants to have something of that personality. then it can have some details, because it's useful for it to kind of, you know, continue that past experience and to fulfill it. For example, if somebody was a poet in one's last birth or a couple of births before, then even if, again, if in the present birth it wants to be having the experience of a poet, then the past life poet and the present life poet, they can be connected. So that the experience of being a poet is not just a poet, means it's not a name, it's not a fame, it's the experience of the expression of being a poet. Then he said there could be a continuity of the past personality into the present personality, and the soul will retain some memory. So you see, these small hints tell us that the whole thing is not so automatic as we think it to be. As you said in the writing of the first letter, there's so much of its karma as is useful. That means, if it thinks that this life as a poet, I would like to have something of my past 10 births back, it takes the karma of the poet of the past life. Otherwise, it says, it is only the yoga drishti that the memory can, it is by yoga drishti that the memory of past lives can come back. The Karana Purusha is what is called the central being by us, the jiva. It stands above the play, supporting it always. There may be what seems to be retrograde movements, but these are only like zigzag movements, not a real falling back, but a return on something not worked out so as to go on better afterwards. Well, that is the first idea. We should have a little clarity on that. You see, it is not a unilinear march of the soul. That means if in my last life I was this and this time I was a little better and next time I was a little better. Because the better is not in the understanding of the human beings, if I was a rich man last year, if I may be a king this life and next time. It's not getting richer and richer, happier and happier in each life. Maybe in my past life I was very happy. But in this life, I purposely take a kind of a beggar's life or a life of poverty or a life where there's no joy in my life. But these are, as he calls it, a zigzag movement. So our evolution is not always from happiness to greater happiness, from riches to greater riches, comfort to greater comfort. There's a unilinear progress, but that doesn't give it an integral progress. So there are zigzag, what Shivananda calls the retrograde movements. So sometimes it gets back into maybe suffering or unhappiness or a quietness or a passive life. And these are phases where it works out something that it had left in the previous lives. So it's not all the dynamic and self-expressive and avant-garde personality. It is there more a kind of a retreat. But there also it works out something not worked out so as to go on better afterwards. And then this famous sentence which we had yesterday, the soul does not go back to the animal condition. But a part of the vital personality may disjoin itself and join an animal birth to work out its animal propensities there. Well, this we saw yesterday, how the vital being, a part of it can come out and become an animal, as you said, either a dog or a pig or a goat or some of these animals, which are, I suppose, much more vulnerable or open to any kind of a sex desire. Basically, it's the basic instincts of the sex that is there in the dogs and the pigs. So that is one of the animal propensities because of which there could be a kind of a halt in the unilinear progress of the soul. There's no truth in the popular belief about the avaricious man becoming a serpent. These are popular romantic superstitions. The next letter. The soul, after it leaves the body, travels through several states or planes until the psychic being has shed its temporary sheaths. Then it reaches the psychic world where it rests in a kind of sleep till it is ready for reincarnation. What it keeps with it of the human experience in the end is only the essence of all that it has gone through, what it can use for its development. This is the general rule, but it does not apply to exceptional cases or to very developed beings who have achieved a greater consciousness than the ordinary human level. It's not the soul, the psychic being, that takes a lesser form. It is some part of the manifested being, usually some part of the vital that does it, owing to some desire, affinity, need or particular experience. This happens fairly often in the ordinary man. I suppose you have noted this word, that it is not the psychic being that takes a lesser form. Please remember, so there is no going back of the psychic being into the animal. It is the vital sheath, and that too it says in the previous one, a part of the vital sheath goes to the animal. But now how does it affect the soul or the psychic being? You see, until the whole vital sheath is dissolved, the psychic cannot move onwards to the next mental sheath. So if on the vital level, one part of the vital being comes down to the animal for satisfaction and satiation, up until that time it gets dissolved, the soul is stuck in the vital world. So you see, that is how the animal birth of satisfaction delays the upward or the higher movement of the psychic being. It's not that one part becomes the animal, let it go, the psychic keeps moving. It cannot, because until the whole vital sheath is dissolved, the next journey is not possible. That is how it is directly linked. Our vital passions of this life are directly linked with the onward journey of the psychic being. It delays. And as we have seen in the Life Divine, of course I think you'll see it later on, but we have already seen it in the synthesis of yoga, that if we have too much of earthly attachments with whatever level is money or possession or property or women or food or anything, if you have not gone beyond the material, physical components of life, then obviously we don't even go to the vital level, we just go across into the subtle physical, come back immediately to the physical. If you have gone a little higher into the vital world, again we come back from there. So what he's saying is only, as he says, a normal human life, taking for granted that the soul really goes from level to level, but within parenthesis he explains, is not so for all the souls. It depends upon what you have done upon the earth. Now, next letter. At the time of death, the being goes out of the body through the head. It goes out in the subtle body and goes to different planes of existence for a short time until it has gone through certain experiences which are the result of its earthly existence. Afterwards, it reaches the psychic world where it rests in a kind of sleep until it is time for it to start a new life on earth. That's what usually happens usually. But there are some beings who are more developed and do not follow this course. Now this is, of course, you have seen two letters which have more or less the same idea. Obviously you will see some ideas are repeated because they are different letters to different individuals maybe. Now the next letter. The soul goes out after death in a subtle body. Recollections last only for a time, not till rebirth. Otherwise its stamp would be so strong that remembrance of the past births, even after taking a new body, would be the rule rather than the exception. Well, in the Life Divine he argues that it would be redundant for the psychic being to keep the memory of the past lives, because it's not useful for the present life at all. In fact, it wants to have a fresh experience and not be burdened by the past life's experiences and memories. So to keep the memory of the past life is a kind of a burden. So it gets rid of them. it sort of, you know, takes the essence, keeps it out in its own world, and then says, for the present, I don't need all that. So it does not necessarily keep the memory of the past lives. Of course, if it wants to get back the memories, it can do so willingly and willfully. But it's not an automatic thing. We have a very long argument in one of the chapters of Life Divine. We'll come to that. So this question of, you know, some people saying that we have memories of my past birth, well, we have to take it with a pinch of salt, because unless the psychic being is so very developed in those persons where it can voluntarily call back the memories of past birth, I think it would be some kind of a vague impression, or maybe some kind of a desirous memory is not the real memory. To continue the letter, you say relationships of one birth persist in successive births, the chances depending on the strength of the attachment. This is somebody has told, written to Sri Aurobindo. He says, this is possible, but not a law. As a rule, the same relationship would not be constantly repeated. The same people often meet again and again on earth in different lives, but the relations are different. The purpose of rebirth would not be served if the same personality with the same relations and experiences are incessantly repeated. Well, this is of course a very common belief in India, especially the 7 life relation of husband and wife. That doesn't happen, because no husband and wife, they ever come back as a husband and wife. They could perhaps meet somewhere on the roads of France, or on the Berlin roads, or on the Bangkok roads. But it will be more like friends, or some people, yes, I think I met you somewhere. But the relationship changed, because as it says, then it would be redundant, you know, each life to have same relation, it is meaningless. It's not the case that there is complete annihilation of the ego in respect of forms of life lower than man after death. What was spoken of as being in a static condition of complete rest is not the ego, but the psychic being after it has shed its vital and other seeds and is resting in the psychic world. Before that, it passes through vital and other worlds on its way to the psychic plane. Now, this is something new again. It is possible to come into direct touch with the departed so long as they are near enough to the earth. It is usually supposed by those who have occult experience that it is for 3 years only. So you can see a hint here that the departed soul stays close to the earth, not in all instances, but where there's a problem of, you know, the vital world are keeping it back for almost about 3 years. Or if they are earthbound, or if they are of those who do not proceed to the psychic plane, but linger near the earth and are soon reborn. Universal statements cannot be easily made about these things. There is a general line, but individual cases vary to an almost indefinite extent. Yeah. There is after death a period in which one passes through the vital world and lives there for a time. It is only the first part of this transit that can be dangerous or painful. In the rest, one works out, under certain surroundings, the remnant of the vital desires and instincts which one had in the body. As soon as one is tired of these and able to go beyond, the vital seed is dropped, and the soul, after a time needed to get rid of some mental survivors, passes into a state of rest in the psychic world and remains there till the next life on earth. Now, this is something interesting. We need to have a little more discussion on this. Sri Aurobindo is telling us It is only the first part of this transit that can be dangerous or painful. You see, I don't know if I told you in this class, because I remember having said it at Sakar when I was taking a class on rebirth. Maybe if I have to repeat, I can do so. You see, what is or which is this dangerous transit? You see, Mother explains, well, there was a kind of an incident which kind of gave us this explanation. There was a lady here in the ashram who was suffering immensely towards the end of her life. So much so that she even started getting, you know, losing some even faith in the Mother and Sri Aurobindo. Because, you know, normally that's what one thinks, you know, when I'm suffering, if I pray, Mother will take care of my suffering. But if the suffering doesn't go, then, you know, you start questioning the Mother is not listening to my prayers and all that. Whatever. The result was that she was in a tremendous depression, and as we know, depression always blocks any grace or divine consciousness acting upon you. Whatever the reason, when she passed away, the Mother saw a very significant thing, that is Sri Aurobindo's symbol seal on her forehead. And that evening, it seems, it is Sri Aurobindo himself who came to the Mother and said, "I have helped her." And then the Mother saw on her forehead the seal of Sri Aurobindo's symbol. The Mother in the beginning was a bit surprised, because, you know, she had lost faith and she was depressed, she was really gloomy and close to all kind of divine influence. But then when Sri Aurobindo comes and tells her about what he has done, then the question rose, what is the meaning of this seal? And Sri Aurobindo seems to have said that all those who die here, I will put this seal so that they may pass through this region. Now that was the discussion, which is this region? Because as we know now, after leaving the gross physical, there is a subtle physical, then there is a vital, the mental, etc., etc. So is it that those who die in the ashram environment, the Pondicherry place, is not necessarily Pondicherry, but the ashramites here, that if they get the seal of Sri Aurobindo's symbol on the forehead, do they get a visa right up to the psychic world? That means what we do now in the physical has no meaning. I mean, you can be the crookedest fellow and the stupidest ass here, and still if your soul goes to the psychic world, all that we are reading about philosophy, about rebirth, has no meaning. So the question rose, what does it mean when Sri Aurobindo says, my seal would be there on the forehead so that they may go through? These are not exact words, I'm just explaining the meaning. Then the Mother explains that immediately after the death, the soul enters into a region called the domain of death. That's what Sri Aurobindo refers to here. The transit is dangerous or painful. There is this domain of death, which is the dangerous and painful region. And Sri Aurobindo's seal helps the soul to pass this painful and dangerous region called the domain of death. So it's just immediately after the soul leaves the body. Because as it says, in the rest one works out. So if Sri Aurobindo's help pushes the soul beyond this domain of suffering and pain, then the suffering is not that bad in a way, if I can say that. As it says, it can work out under certain surroundings, the remnant of the vital desires, etc. So afterwards, the soul gets a kind of impetus to the possibility, it works out itself. So what Sri Aurobindo has done is to really see that the most difficult passage, the most dangerous, the most painful, there Sri Aurobindo gives the push. Of course, again the question came up, what do we mean by those who die here? Is it the boulevard area of Pondicherry? If we die at Vaitukuppam, you know Vaitukuppam is outside boulevard. Puthukuppam, no chance. So those of you who take new houses, see that you are inside the boulevard. And those who are here, you are lucky. But obviously, the here is not a geography. It is later in another context you would say, those who have turned to Sri Aurobindo and the mother and have surrendered themselves. One can turn as an intellectual, mental curiosity, what is this super mind, I want to know with my mind what is super mind. Quite an audacious demand. But that's not turning. Turning is those who take really ashray, sharanam, surrender. So those who take up that kind of a surrender and not ride, you know, I'm here, Sri Aurobindo's birthday and mother's birthday, I come here and then maybe on 1st January there's a Tirupati darshan, so I go to Tirupati on the 1st January. On maybe on 10th February there's another darshan at Meenakshi temple, I go there. And 21st February I come back to Pondicherry. It's not this kind of, you know, paying lip service to all the gods and goddesses and then say, mother, I'm going to die here, so you take me through. No, it is an exclusive turning to the mother and Sri Aurobindo, coming under their shelter and fully and totally depending on them. For them perhaps, this blessing works. That is, the soul is taken to the worst phase of its journey. Well, I'm telling you all this, thanks to a discussion I had with Jugal Kishore Mukherjee. Some of you know him. Because when I was reading all these chapters on karma and rebirth, I thought, you know, I should go to somebody who knows more about this inner secret. So we had a long discussion. And this is what ensued. And these are the answers that we get. So this is a very important letter. In fact, I had not understood that before about the domain of death. I had not linked it with this. But now it becomes clearer. And so it says, this domain of death is the place which is most dangerous. In fact, if one is blessed, of course one is blessed. It's a little personal thing, but it throws a lot of light. When my father-in-law passed away, after a few days, 10th, 12th, 13th day, I don't remember, he came to me in my dream and said, as typically as he would when he was in his body, saying, Anand, from here, where do I go? And he talked to me in Bengali. Well, now I can understand that once he passed through this dangerous zone, with the blessing of Mother and Sri Aurobindo, obviously, then there was a direction was open into the vital world, into the mental worlds. And as in his life, he would always, we were son-in-law, a philosopher and friend, all kinds of relations we had. So when he was in his body, he would always ask me about these questions about Mother and Sri Aurobindo's philosophy. And so I would answer. So even then, he asked me the same question, I'm Ekantar Kota Jabo. The same thing. Now we put together things and we say yes. So otherwise, some people are stuck in this zone for long times. And of course, there are lots of stories from Nalinida, etc. I won't go into that. But that is what we understand here. Now one can help the departed souls by one's goodwill or by occult means if one has the knowledge. Well, right there, I think I better tell you, it's an incident which we know. So if somebody has the occult knowledge, one can help the departed soul. That is, there is a narration of a story, a lady who goes to Nalanda and tells her that she has been seeing her mother for the past 10 years, who has been almost, you know, weeping and in a depression all through. So she was so frustrated, she goes to Nalanda and says, I'm hardly able to sleep because my mother, I see her every night, almost every night. What do I do? And Nalanda said, come back later. And later when she returns to Nalanda, he said, well, from now on she will not come to you. Why? What happened? He, because of his occult knowledge, he went into the vital world and there he saw the soul of the mother. And then he helped that lady, that person, that soul to move on. Because she must have been stuck in the vital regions, and because of her attachment or because of her whatever the reasons, she was not able to move out of the vital world. And because of this attachment with the daughter, she always came to the daughter and pleading and crying and all that. So once Nalanda did that, the lady never came back. So that's what I can say about this. By occult means, if one has knowledge, one can help. Of course, we had another person in the ashram, I forget his name, an elderly person. Even when I was a kid, you know, he's a white beard and a huge stomach. He used to sit near the samadhi, giving us agarbatti in those days. I forget his name. He had the knowledge to contact with the departed souls. I mean, in those days, many people would go to him and ask for the departed soul of his friend or parents or somebody or somebody. And he had the knowledge. So that's what we see here. By one's goodwill or by occult means, if one has the knowledge. The one thing that one should not do is to hold them back by sorrow for them or longings or by anything else that would pull them nearer to earth or delay their journey to their place of rest. For this we have been told several times, and that's what is magnificent in the ashram. One almost forgets the person, you know, he is so much detached that even one forgets. I mean, the utmost one people remember her or him is till the 12th day, when the close and nearby people, they call others for a meditation, and Tathastu after that is gone. So that is what Shravana says, not to hold them back by sorrow for them or longing. You know, again, we have in India this annual remembrance, you know, is 1 year past that this man passed away. All that is useless. Because we are longing and recovering, remembering once again. This is all these longings or anything else that would pull them nearer to earth or delay the journey. So any of this annual remembrance, well, in my family, my uncle passed away and my aunt, you know, every month she would do that. That day celebrate, not celebrate, but mourn that day for one full year. So 12 months she did that, and then now annually she is doing that. You see, all this is ignorance, and unnecessarily we are delaying the journey of the soul. So that's what, you know, impresses somebody when they come new to the ashram, that how death is taken as a kind of, you know, just a kind of a junction. And he was here, he played his role. He went to the mother, he has done his work for the mother, and Tathastu is gone. So, this is, I think, very important, that it is those of us who are little conscious now, we could practice this, not to delay or to bring back this kind of by sorrow or pull them back, because I remember even in my own family, when my father in his last days was suffering with cancer, well, we did as much as we could, but then towards the end, we had to pray to the mother saying, Mother, take him away. We have no bandhan anymore. There are no tying up, no pulling down father. So these things help, because we have to cut ourselves the living for conscious, pray to the mother that our relations are cut. He is your child, let him come back to you, take him away. So these things are what we can do, what Sri Aurobindo says, by goodwill. So when the time comes, you are quiet, tell the mother, Ma, whatever happens is your will. But we are not crying over it, we are not really sorrowing, we are not saying, oh, my papa is going, no, nothing. He is the child of the mother, he does his work. So these are things that we can do consciously, and as you can see, lots of things are there to help us. Well, I suppose we have to take a halt there. Well, when we come back next week or whenever, for the next class, I'll tell you by Friday the exact information regarding the next week classes. Well, I'll continue with this, because you can see there are small issues but very important, and as I told you, they're all related again to issues that Sri Aurobindo would take up in rebirth and karma, etc., which is, I suppose, one of the most magnificent paragraphs. But I can tell you right away that we are going to take up this question of rebirth and karma a little at great length, because after this, as I told you often, the chapters in the Life Divine take a completely different turn. You know, the last six chapters are a completely different turn. So, these chapters on rebirth are of great importance for us on a normal day-to-day living also. So I'll take up all that is really given to us by Mother and Sri Aurobindo. It doesn't matter what time it takes. But let me complete one real major subject of philosophy and a major concern in our life. Yeah?